This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you with the assistance of Steve Dow today. Before we go on to talk about Chogham, just got a message in here regarding aged care services from Terry. He says, if most of the service care providers for aged care are religious-based organisations, then marriage can only strengthen the arguments for relationship recognition for the elderly. And that in turn will allow older people to be out and proud in senior care, which in turn will lead to greater tolerance and above all understanding from care providers. It's only my opinion, but I think marriage is still the most important issue for GLBTI people today.
I agree, Doug, but I think sometimes the whole marriage thing tends to cloud the debate of everything else that we need to solve.
There's lots of things that need dealing with, and we tend to, as part of the reason for doing the show the way we're doing it today is, you know, there are other things, and getting married is not a magic bullet. It won't solve everything.
It's a very first world problem for us, isn't it? I mean, there's what, 41, 42 countries in the Commonwealth that still outlaw homosexuality?
Exactly. And that's what we're hoping is going to get challenged at the upcoming Chogham. Now, next weekend, the Queen will open the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in Perth, and high on the agenda will be the decriminalisation of homosexuality in member countries, and some of them have very harsh anti-gay laws. Rob Lake, the Executive Director of the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations, will be there, and he joins us now. Good afternoon, Rob.
Good afternoon.
So, we've had Kevin Rudd issuing a statement saying he'll raise the issue with foreign ministers. We've got Michael Kirby getting a lot of press saying this issue is going to be pushed at Chogham. What do you think the chances are?
We are very hopeful. I mean, in terms of, if nothing else, putting these issues firmly on the agenda, I think that is one of the things that this process has done. And I think only today we're starting to hear stronger news about the Eminent Persons Group report and its recommendations, which also call for decriminalisation.
Now, the Eminent Persons Group is an advisory group to the heads of government.
To the Commonwealth, yeah.
To the Commonwealth, I should say, yeah. And is that chaired by Michael Kirby, or is he just a member?
He's a member of the panel. The panel group prepared a report for the Commonwealth. Well, the report is to be considered at the heads of government meeting. It was really a report on a range of issues, but a big theme of it is human rights, not just in terms of human rights and GLBT communities and sex workers and people who inject drugs, but also how the Commonwealth prioritises human rights as it works.
Now, why this has been framed very much as a health issue by Michael Kirby, and of course you're from the Federation of AIDS Organisations. Why is it that we always have to sneak in a sense, gay rights underneath this health banner? Because surely it's a question of a straightforward question of human rights, not just something that we ought to do for practical health reasons. And in this case, we're talking about the fight against AIDS.
Sure. I am from the Federation of AIDS Organisations, and one of our primary arguments around this is that there is very strong evidence of the impact of laws like this on HIV prevention. So I would say that rather than trying to sneak, law change, law reform, or human rights for GLBT communities, we are working on what is proven. Proven evidence about the impact of HIV and particularly the legal environment.
Okay, so why is it important then to legalise homosexual behaviour in these countries from the point of view of fighting AIDS?
Criminalising, whether it's criminalising sex work or gay men or sodomy, which is what we're talking about in most cases, is a major factor as a barrier for people to get tested, to, I suppose, be an audience for prevention messages and education, and to really be able to look after their health.
So you mean people are frightened to come forward for treatment if they caught the disease in an illegal fashion?
Yep. Well, if they go to a doctor and say that, you know, I kind of got it from the man I had sex with, a concern about that. Lots of people are living in countries where all of the messages they're hearing from their government, from their police, are messages of are negative messages.
Rob, Steve Dow here. What out of those 41, 42 countries, so we're talking about, you know, Uganda, Zimbabwe, Ghana as some of the worst offenders in this regard. I mean, how many of those countries would actually have HIV prevention campaigns?
All of them would have HIV prevention campaigns, but one of the things that we have over the last couple of years become clearer about is that many countries have been really loath to talk about the group of people who are most at risk for HIV. So that's sex workers, men who have sex with men, and drug users. So in most countries who are will claim that they have a generalized epidemic, which is sort of code for a heterosexual epidemic, if you actually go into more detail and look at who is getting HIV in those countries, you will find that sex workers, drug users, and men who have sex with men are much, much more highly represented in the figures.
So the campaigns have to be covert. You're saying that they don't address the particular people that they should be aimed at?
They don't. And this is what has happened since the United Nations General Assembly meeting in June, where they issued the political declaration on HIV. They particularly said countries have to understand the epidemic, their own epidemic, and they have to respond to the epidemic they have, rather than, in a sense, the epidemic they ideologically would like to have.
Yeah, I seem to remember reading somewhere that there was a campaign in one country that made this great play about how you could catch HIV through the exchange of bodily fluids, and that actually led some people to believe that anal intercourse was safer than vaginal intercourse because the anus doesn't produce fluids during sex.
We've had a litany of misinformation over the years, and from people who would rather say anything than, you know, if you're a man having sex with a man, use a condom. If you're injecting, don't share. Use a clean needle. There are many governments and many, you know, kind of in,
sure.
They'd rather say anything than that.
Well, I mean, we mentioned Robert Mugabe a few moments ago. I mean, you're not going to persuade him, are you?
Well, don't forget that Zimbabwe is actually not a member of the Commonwealth at the moment.
Unfortunately.
But in fact, we not far from there, you know, we have Uganda who weren't able to pass their legislation looking for a death penalty for gay men. You know, if they didn't withdraw it, they weren't able to pass it. And we just, I think 2 or 3 weeks ago, Nigeria passed legislation that criminalises gay men who marry. So, you know, like kind of we have, you know, it, the thing that's interesting, because I keep, you know, a number of times when I'm talking about this notion of the proportion of Commonwealth countries that criminalise, when you think about it, you know, the minority of countries that don't. You know, we've got 10 countries that in the Commonwealth that don't criminalise sex men.
Rob, I mean, you mentioned Uganda there, and it's not just the state that's the problem there, it's the media. That newspaper Rolling Stone, which named and published photos of Uganda's top 100 gays and called for the hanging of David Kato, who was subsequently murdered. How do you even begin to speak the language of that mindset?
For a start, how do we from here speak that language? I mean,
do you actually help out any of these countries?
Well, we don't so much because our focus, I suppose, is more the Asia Pacific region. But there is there's a strong network of African activists and African activist organisations who are doing this work. But they are this is the environment that they are working in, and I mean, I think if there's ever a word to describe a toxic environment, that is a toxic environment.
Do you think social networking can play a role like it has in the Arab Spring?
Possibly, because one of the things that it does, you know, for poorly resourced organisations and things that, you know, kind of have really limited access, they can get up. So kind of the Kaleidoscope Trust in the UK, there's, which is African expats, you know, countries can get themselves some visibility, can try and link. I think that's one of the joys of social media. You know, you don't have to have thousands of dollars to make a website to a Facebook page. You know?
Well, we've heard a great deal in recent months about how the mobile phone is transforming the situation for a lot of people in Africa. You know, there's all kinds of apps being developed for mobile phones that tell them where to get the best prices for their crops, for example, and all kinds of things like this. Information they've never had access to before. Surely that's an avenue well worth pursuing when it comes to providing sex education, HIV prevention education, and so
forth. And many people are using those sorts of things, because one of the things is that a lot of those sorts of countries have bypassed the whole desktop PC, so people, they just access, I saw figures that said something like there's a projection that by 2015, 70% of people will access the net using a phone. And so, you know, so they've bypassed the need to have a computer. And it's really about making the apps usable. The other thing, it brings us privacy, you know, kind of you don't have to go into an internet cafe to look at a website around your house.
There's one other issue that's popped up. The British government has recently said that it's going to cut aid to Commonwealth countries that
don't decriminalise.
Do you think that's a productive move, or is that going to be counterproductive and just hurt the people it's trying to help?
Oh, that's a tough question, because even I've been looking at some of the responses from some of the people in those countries, and even
Ghana
are,
in particular.
Yeah, I mean, but even they are unsure, because those people have been hurt already. You know, they have seriously been hurt already. From my perspective, as an action that a country like the UK can take, it's a pretty amazing thing to be seeing. Because in a sense, what we're saying is that we want to leverage some human rights from development. That's great when the leverage we want is the things that we want, but we screamed pretty loudly when the US government was linking things like reproduction and abortion through their funding. So, you know, this is sort of what we like, but broadly,
it doesn't seem to be a terribly helpful one, as far as I can see.
Well, except that I think for a country that's looking for some ways to make a strong statement, it's there. I take your point, and also the fact that the people who are in these countries themselves are very much not, you know, like kind of unsure themselves. So that whether it will help or hinder.
Well, let's hope that you get a decent hearing at Chogham. As I say, Kevin Rudd's issued a statement saying he'll be pushing the issue.
Absolutely, and we've called on the Prime Minister, because it's fantastic what Kevin Rudd has said. Kevin Rudd is the Foreign Minister. Kevin Rudd won't be at the Heads of Government meeting. Julia Gillard will be at the Heads of Government meeting. Mm-hmm. And what we are really hoping is that what Kevin Rudd is saying is obviously kind of representing the views of the government, and the views that the governments of Australia, Canada, UK, but also Seychelles, some of these countries that are really making major strides, will be pushing.
Yeah, we'll just have to hope that this is not yet another flanking manoeuvre on Kevin Rudd's part to try and embarrass Julia. I hate the way these things get caught up in domestic politics. All right, well, Rob, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. Good luck.
Thank you.
At Chogham, and please get in touch with us afterwards and let us know how it all went and what, if anything, we got out of it.
Okay, we will.
You're welcome. Thanks. That was Rob Lake there from the Australian Federation of AIDS Organisations. Now, coming up next, some gays like to joke that bisexuals have twice the fun, or that they're just gays who are afraid to commit. But are they, in fact, doubly discriminated against by mainstream society and again by us?
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.